With more Australians trading their backyards for balconies and courtyards, apartment and townhouse living has become the norm for more Australians. At the same time, budget constraints mean that many investors are buying apartments rather than houses. And since there's no doubt apartment living is going to become even more prevalent moving forward, you really need to understand your rights and your responsibilities when owning an apartment. For example, where does your apartment end? And where does the common property start? And it's probably not what you think. Or who's responsible for when things go wrong in the common area? And what six things do you need to know before buying a strata apartment or into any strata building? Now, that's what I'm going to be discussing in today's show with strata law specialist Amanda Farmer. The inspiration for the chat today came from an article I read recently about a Melbourne school teacher who thought she'd done all her homework when buying her first property. She looked into her chosen area in Melbourne's northwest, found an apartment building she liked, and commissioned a building inspection report before she bought the property. But now, 2.5 years on, she's facing financial ruin. Her block's owners are taking its builders to court over allegations of severe defects in its construction, and this teacher's having to pay both repairs and her share of spiralling legal costs. Sure, she had a pre-purchase report done by an expert, but he only examined her apartment and nothing of the building in which it sits or its communal areas, which are also the owner's responsibility or part of it. She didn't realise either that she should have ordered a strata report that would have revealed, through the minutes with Owners Corporation, the ongoing battle with the builders. Now, this is a tragic story. A 32-year-old financially ruined through owning the wrong apartment. But it's a story I've heard before, so I hope you're going to get a new insight into what you need to do before buying into a strata property in today's chat with Amanda Farmer. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
If you're considering buying or already own an apartment, a townhouse or a villa unit, whether as a property investor or for your own home, there are some things that you really should know and you should understand about owners corporations. Yet it seems that many property purchasers go in blind, not fully understanding their obligations. So to bring you some clarity in these matters, I'm going to have a chat with Amanda Farmer, who's a strata lawyer with over 17 years' experience advising owners, communities, managers and developers. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good, thank you. Now, Amanda, I know you're passionate about all things strata, considering you hosted the Your Strata Property podcast, and you personally are a resident in a strata scheme. By the way, so am I, and you're a lawyer in that field. So please tell us, how did your interest in strata develop?
Yes, well, as a young lawyer, I was working in a practice that always dabbled in a little bit of strata law, and it caught my interest because it seemed to be ever-changing, ever-challenging. It was the kind of area where we'd have clients ringing up and asking questions and we'd have to sit back and scratch our heads and say, oh, that's a new one. Haven't come across that before. Always looking up legislation, looking up cases. And I compared it to the other part of the practice, which was family law. And family law, I wasn't that interested in. Fairly procedural. I saw it as a little bit same-same, a bit traditional, unchanging. And I thought to myself as a young lawyer, if ever I had a choice, strata law would be where I wanted to specialize. And I wanted to move away from the family law side of the practice. And when I started my own practice about 8 years ago now, I decided to become a specialist strata lawyer. What I have now come to realize, Michael, is that strata law kind of is the family law of the property property law world. We are dealing with
well
people's
said,
homes,
yes,
with their lives, and it does get emotional. However, there is a very strong commercial component to this area of the law, and that definitely captures my interest as well.
Great. Well, I know after COVID, we may be living a little bit differently, and more of us are going to choose to live in homes or not in the high-rise towers. But still, a large number of Australians have swapped their backyards for balconies and courtyards, and they're clearly going to continue to do that. So I think it's really important to understand what you get into when you move into a community of sorts, which is really what owning an apartment, whether, as you said, I said before, as an owner-occupier or as an investor, in a group of apartments or townhouses. So let's start from the scratch for those who don't understand. What is a strata unit? What is strata all about? Now, of course, I believe I understand, but I'd love to hear your version of it.
Yes. Strata is a way of parceling up property for sale. And I say property because we're not actually parceling up land, we're parceling up airspace. So that's one of the important concepts to get your head around when you're purchasing a strata apartment. You are purchasing airspace, you're not purchasing land. And there's a whole series of rights and obligations that come with that and come with the way that you use your property that it's really important you're aware of so you don't get any surprises when you're going through this right-sizing process. We don't call it downsizing anymore, Michael. We're calling it right sizing.
I like that idea. Now, I'm old enough to know that in the old days there were company titles and then stratum titles. And I'm actually proud that Australia was the country that was the beginning of strata law, something that we did before other parts of the world. In other words, the concept had to come, how do we divide a parcel of land that was on one title when all of a sudden we now put 3, 4 or up to 100 titles on what used to be just one?
Yes. And how do we then manage all of the relationships that grow out of that? We have separately owned airspaces, as I've said, and then we have commonly owned common property. So that's our foyers, our lifts, our stairwells, our swimming pools, if we're lucky to have one, our gyms. And we have legislation right across Australia, different in different parts of Australia, but strata title legislation that helps us to govern those relationships and make sure that our strata buildings are running as smoothly as possible.
Well, I want to get into how we do that and what we need to know. But before I do, I'd like to maybe give an example of a case study, because I know many people have got no clue about strata laws when they buy a property, and not being aware of these leads to, well, could lead to all sorts of trouble. And I know I've read a couple of cases where it's led to financial ruin of the owners, and that's a tragedy. That's a shame that shouldn't happen. So have you got any case studies you'd like to share with us just to explain what could go wrong? And of course, we'll then talk about the things we should do so that doesn't happen to us.
Definitely. I know, Michael, when we're reading in the media about owners who have faced financial ruin after buying into strata, it's often the case that they're buying into brand new buildings or they've purchased off the plan and the building then turns out to have building defects and the builder or the developer is no longer around to claim against. They've wound up their company and the owners are left holding a multi-million dollar bill. And particularly in New South Wales, we've seen a lot of attention on that in the last 12 months with the appointment of our new building commissioner, David Chandler. But I have to say, a lot of the clients that I work with are suffering from challenges and they're not even in new buildings, which is a bit of a concern. I have a client at the moment who is an investor, a very savvy property investor, bought and sold a lot of properties successfully in their career, and they decided a few years ago for the first time to buy into strata. And they purchased this strata property, got the advice that they thought they needed at the time from their conveyancing solicitor, and had big plans to develop the property, to renovate it, to use it. It was a commercial property, to use it for a particular purpose. And they read the bylaws of the building, and we can get into what bylaws are, but they read the bylaws and a particular bylaw they thought allowed them to do some extensive renovation work. And they read the bylaw as allowing them to do it without having to seek any other approval. They went ahead and started their work, and this was significant work, $500,000 worth of renovation work. And it turned out that the owner's corporation read the bylaw a different way and decided that this bylaw did not allow them to do that work. Now, I have been working with that commercial owner for the last couple of years in a series of litigious tribunal court proceedings, determining what the bylaw means and working out whether the owner has to go through the cost of reinstating the common property that they've affected.
Now, that's an extreme case, but I've come across it where people have wanted to put an air conditioner into their older established property, and they just assumed they could do that. But there's something that has to sit outside, and sometimes you'd put it on the balcony or sometimes at the rear of the building. And most of the time you're allowed to do that. You'd think, hey, it's air conditioner, it's my unit, it's my balcony. No, you don't have a right to do it, do you? You've got to ask other people's permission.
That's right. And in the case of air conditioners, a really good example there, it's because it usually affects the external appearance of the building. Mm. So any work that's affecting external appearance, any work that is a structural alteration, and in New South Wales, any work that affects waterproofing, we all see that as major work. And that's the kind of work that has to go before a general meeting. And you have to get quite a high threshold of approval before you're allowed to continue with that work.
So let's go back to basics again. When you buy an apartment, you get to own the apartment. And we'll actually have a talk about where the apartment stops and the common area starts in a sec, if we may. But you also automatically become a member of what's known as the owner's corporation. In the past, in some states, it was called the body corporate, which has responsibility for the common areas. And it makes decisions for that strata scheme. And it's a democracy, isn't it? So therefore, some people have more rights because they've got bigger units, but in general, your rights are proportionate to either the size or the value of your unit. And you've got no say in that. Would that be a fair way of putting it?
Yes. So when you purchase your apartment, it's important to look at your unit entitlement. We call it in most states of Australia. And you're right, Michael, that does determine your voting power on particular resolutions. And it also determines what your share of the levies are. So those with a higher unit entitlement are paying higher levies, though you also have greater voting power.
Now, the owner's corporation does pay for common expenses, and some investors and owner-occupiers think, I don't want to pay that. But if you owned a house yourself, you'd still have to pay for insurance. You'd have to pay for upkeep and maintenance. One of the things many good owners' corporations do is stash some money aside for future, which a lot of homeowners tend not to do, and then they suddenly get caught out. But if you do it correctly, the expenses shouldn't create a major issue to you, because they're what you'd have to pay if you owned the property outright anyway, Amanda.
Yes, we do have laws around Australia that require our owners' corporations, our body corporates, to budget and to forecast for their expenditure. In most states, we have 10-year capital works plans, and the building is required by law to forecast out 10 years. What might we have to repair, maintain in that 10 years, and then to budget accordingly so that we're not surprised with these expenses down the track, as you might be if you own a freestanding property.
Sure. So where does my building end? And where does yours, you're living above me, where does yours start? How does one decide that? Because you just had a leak in your bath or your shower and it's coming down into my apartment. Whose fault is it? Where does it start?
Yes, really good question. And a lot of new strata owners are often surprised at how little they own. I generally say, look around your apartment, because what you can see is pretty much what you own, from the surface of the paint to the top of the floor covering to the surface of the ceiling. And if you turned your apartment upside down, sort of tipped everything out, then everything you own is left out, and what's behind is the common property. So if you are scratching the surface of the paint, if you are lifting the floor coverings, if you are retiling the bathroom, you are affecting common property, and it's very likely you need approval for that.
That's right. So again, most people don't realise it. Having said that, there are a couple of things you should realise if you get involved. And one of them, and you mentioned it a while ago, was the bylaws. So the owners corporation meet on a regular basis, and often it's only once a year. If it's a big owners corporation, a big block of apartments, there's a committee that makes decisions on behalf of everybody. But all that's governed, isn't it? And it's governed by what is called bylaws.
Yes, the bylaws are registered with the strata plan when the building is first developed, but they are changed. They can be changed by owners' corporations over time. They're changed by resolutions at meetings. When you purchase your property, a copy of the bylaws will be included in your contract for sale. And it's really important to read those carefully to get advice from somebody who understands strata law about what those bylaws are. They can say anything from whether or not you can keep a pet to what the steps are that you must take if you want to renovate a bathroom, what you can keep on your balcony, what the hours of use of the swimming pool are, where the visitors can park. They are the rules for the day-to-day operation of the building, and they should be your first port of call when you're looking at purchasing into strata.
Now, I know some investors considered buying an apartment and letting it out in the short term on Airbnb or something like that. Now, of course, all that's been put aside with COVID, but that created problems with owners' corporations, didn't it?
Definitely. Residential buildings in general don't like short-term letting. They find that the impact on their common facilities is not what they bargained for. And we can now, in New South Wales, pass bylaws that prevent investor owners from short-term letting. So another really important reason why, if you're an investor and you've got that in mind, you need to be checking the bylaws.
So when you look at purchasing a property, you look at the bylaws, the minutes of owners' corporation meetings in the past as well, but you also want to see what expenses have gone out. Sometimes they're called levies, Amanda.
Yes, that's right. Every owner is obliged, legally obliged, to contribute to the funds of the owners' corporation, and they do this by paying their levies. The levies are set at the annual general meeting of the owners' corporation each year. So you'll often be told by the real estate agent what the quarterly levies are, what's the amount you have to contribute. It's a good idea to inspect the books and records of the owners' corporation, read those minutes of meeting, have a look at the financial reports to make sure the levies are indeed what you've been told they are, and there's no surprises coming up down the track. There's no special levy proposed to be raised in future, and if there is, that you have budgeted for that and you've borne that in mind.
So the people who form the owners' corporation are the owners, and if it's a big owners' corporation, they have a committee managing it and a chairman. But then these people usually, and in my mind always should, employ a manager to run the business side of it.
Yes, that's called a strata manager, professional strata manager. And this is these days a very skilled and skillful profession. And we need a lot more good strata managers in this area as we have a lot more buildings. The strata manager issues the notices for the meetings, the notices for the levies. They work closely with the committee to let them know what their obligations are. They answer questions about renovations that a lot owner might want to do. I've seen some very good strata managers guide their committees and their owners through difficult litigation. I often call the strata manager the project manager. They kind of have to be all things to everyone and to be coordinating a lot of things in the background, sending their buildings off to engineers if you need an engineer, answering tenant questions, dealing with property managers and real estate agents. It's a really difficult job, and it's a job that well-run buildings have a skillful person in place to do this for them.
Oh, I think that's critical. And I know that there's some of the smaller, older apartment blocks, there's often somebody there, a local owner occupier who, I'll do it, I'll look after it. And they try to save everybody some money. And some naive investors think, oh, this is good, it's saving me. Owners corporation managers don't charge a lot. And today, with all the laws that have to be understood, I don't think this is something that any normal investor should take on themselves.
No, I have seen those buildings. We call them self-managed buildings, and the books and records are often in a shoebox under somebody's bed. Yeah. And I think investors buying into those buildings thinking, well, the levies are low, so it's a good deal. Be careful not to be penny-wise, pound-foolish. I've certainly seen those kinds of buildings come undone.
Definitely. So we talked about the strata manager. And how do you decide who's on the committee? And is it a good idea to get on the committee if you can?
Yes. So the committee is elected at each annual general meeting. And it is that group of owners who is representative of the wider group. I often explain it like a board of directors. If you're a shareholder in a company, you'll have your board of directors there. And these are people, they don't have to be residents, but they often are because they're there in the building at the coalface, understanding how everything operates. They work closely together with the strata manager. Look, I always say it is a good idea to put your hand up for the committee. It is a good way to understand what's going on in the building, to be involved in the decision making. I work with some clients who complain sometimes about the building not raising money or raising too much money or doing work or not doing work. And the first thing I say is, well, are you on the committee? And have you had a role in making those decisions and having those discussions with your strata manager? It's often a good idea. They are volunteer positions, even though in some committees they resolve to pay their committee members a small amount. They are volunteer positions. But if you've got a good strata manager, if you've got other supportive committee members, it doesn't have to be an overwhelming job.
Now, one of the things that happens is you can have disputes amongst the various owners, but you can also have disputes with your neighbours, and that can sometimes lead to quite a costly exercise, whether it's your tree damaging other people's property or whatever. So these are often noted in the minutes of the meeting and something that you've got to look at to see, are there some pending issues or have there been past building issues, Amanda?
Yes, all part of that exercise of inspecting the books and records when you're looking to buy into a building. You do want to look to see, are there any signs of disharmony? Is there any litigation on any proceedings in the tribunal at the moment? Especially if you're going to live in the building, it is a nice community if everybody can get along. And I always say the best way to find out the level of harmony in a building is when you go and search the books and records. You want to look at emails. Ask the strata manager who's holding the books and records, can I please see all of the emails that are passing between you and the committee, between the committee members? That can really quickly give you an insight into what's going on at that precise point in time, how friendly or otherwise the residents and the committee members are, and whether there are any looming disasters that you might want to be aware of as a potential purchaser.
Now, Amanda, I know that if I buy a house, I've got to do a building and pest inspection because it's my responsibility. If there's termites or if there's rising damp, I've got to pay for it. What if I buy an apartment? Where does my responsibility stop, and what should the person doing the inspection, if I get one at all, what should they be looking for?
Yes, a lot of people say you don't need to do a building and pest if you're buying into strata because the owners corporation looks after the common property. The building is insured by the owners corporation. They do the pest control. It's all their responsibility. So if it's a problem, you can blame it on them. Now, I don't give that advice. I say to owners who are wanting to buy into strata, absolutely, get your own builder, your own engineer in to have a look at the property. Have a look at what you can see from inside your apartment. Is there anything there that is cause for concern? Water penetration is the big one. And this is in new buildings, older buildings as well. Is there a leak from the roof? Often the roof membrane is over 25 years old and you bought this beautiful penthouse and all of a sudden you've got saggy ceilings. It's a really good idea to know about that before you sign that contract. Because even though it is the owner's corporation's responsibility, do you really want to have that headache of sorting that out when you're a new owner?
Sure, I agree with that. Interestingly, I've come across cases where sometimes, even though it is the common area, not all the owners get use or benefit from some new upgrade or have got access to that part of the building that's caused damage. So you can often have disputes amongst owners, can't you, as to, hey, I don't think I should pay for that.
Yes, definitely. And that's quite common in New South Wales, where our laws are very strict that the owner's corporation is responsible to repair and maintain the common property. And if they decide to do that and raise money for that purpose, everybody has to contribute to the cost of that in accordance with their unit entitlement. Even if it means that you're on the north side of the building and your windows are fine, but the east side of the building needs brand new windows, well, windows are common property. The owner's corporation will pay and you will contribute to that cost, even though you don't directly benefit from the new windows.
So as we said at the beginning, it's a democracy. Everyone gets a vote, but the committee or the majority decide.
That's it.
So, Amanda, you have your own podcast about strata. How do people find out more about that and a bit more about you?
Yes, thank you. My podcast is called Your Strata Property, and I have been podcasting for over 5 years now. I think it's nearly six.
You're a veteran then. Well done.
A lot of people say to me, Amanda, you got in starting podcasting before it all went nuts. Yes, I really enjoy podcasting and listening to podcasts as well, and it's a great way to get this important information out to as many people as possible. You can find my podcast over at yourstrataproperty.com.au, and that's also the place where you can access my ebook, where I share the six things that you absolutely must know about owning a strata property.
Well, that's where we've got to go, and I'll leave a link in the show notes. And of course, if you've got a legal issue in the state of New South Wales related to a strata, I know you're not allowed to advertise, but can I say that I'd love to have a specialist like you on my side protecting my interests. And so you're a practicing lawyer at Lawyers Chamber, which is a boutique legal practice in Sydney, focusing entirely on the strata and community title laws. Thank you so much for your time, Amanda.
Thank you so much, Michael.
I hope you got some benefit from my chat with Amanda. And since you're listening to this podcast, you're probably interested in property investment, success, and money. So I've got a way of saying thank you to you for taking time out of your busy day to listen to me. I'd like to give you a wide range of ebooks to add to your success library. Just go to podcastbonus.com.au, leave me your details, and you'll get exclusive access to a wide range of my ebooks, and that from a group of other property and tax experts. That address again is podcastbonus.com.au, but I'll leave a link in the show note in case you're on the go and can't take that down right now. Now, in a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you, a lesson I learned from the late, great Jim Rohn, and you know I love his messages because they've changed my life, so I hope this one about success is going to help you as well. But another way of helping you achieve success is to take advantage of the opportunities the current property markets are offering. Now, sure, the markets are moving forward, but by now you'd know from me that not all properties are going to increase in value at the same rate. And in fact, some sectors of the market are going to continue to languish. So in my mind, now more than ever, correct property selection will be critical. And you can trust the team at Metropole, my team at Metropole, to provide you with direction, guidance and results. So whether you're a beginning investor or an experienced investor, at times like this, you need an advisor who takes a holistic approach to your wealth creation. And that's exactly what you're going to get from the multi-award winning team at Metropole. So go to metropole.com.au, find out a bit about what we do and how we can help you. And I look forward to being part of your ongoing wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to share a lesson with you from my late mentor, Jim Rohn, who said that success is easy, but so is neglect. Now, he explained that people often asked him how, over a six-year period, he became financially successful, while many people at the time didn't. And Jim Rohn's answer was, the answer is simple. The things I found easy to do, they found to be not easy to do, said Jim Rohn. He said, I found it easy to set goals that could change my life. They found it easy not to. I found it easy to read the books that had affected my thinking and my ideas. They found it easy not to. Jim Rohn said, I found it easy to attend the classes and the seminars and get around other successful people. And they said it probably wouldn't matter. So Jim Rohn said, if I had to sum it all up, I'd say that I found it easy to do, they found it easy not to do. And then he said 6 years later, he became a millionaire, and the others were still blaming the economy, the government, company policies, yet they neglected to do the basics, the easy things. Jim Rohn said, in fact, the primary reason most people don't do well, or don't do as well as they could or they should, can be summed up in one single word. Neglect. It's not lack of money. The banks are full of money, said Jim Rohn. It's not lack of opportunity. Jim Rohn explained that as much of the free world is still continuing to offer the most unprecedented and abundant opportunities in the last 6,000 years of recorded history. Jim Rohn said it's not the lack of books. The libraries are full of books and they're free. It's not the schools. The classrooms are full of good teachers. We have plenty of ministers, leaders, counselors, and advisors. Jim Rohn said, everything we would ever need to become rich and powerful and sophisticated is within our reach. Well, today I'd be adding to that, there are podcasts and YouTube videos and blogs. Remember, Jim Rohn passed away a number of years ago, and he taught these lessons many, many years ago when I was just starting and learning to become financially independent. So Jim Rohn taught me that neglect is like an infection. He said, left unchecked, it'll spread throughout the entire system of disciplines and eventually lead to a complete breakdown of potentially joy-filled and prosperous human life. Jim Rohn said, not doing the things we know we should do causes us to feel guilty, and guilt leads to an erosion of self-confidence. And he said, as our self-confidence diminishes, so does the level of activity. He was guessing it's a downward spiral. And he said, as our activity diminishes, our results inevitably decline. And as our results suffer, our attitude begins to weaken. And as our attitude begins to slowly shift from positive to negative, our self-confidence diminishes even more. And it goes on and on. Well, Jim Rohn then said his suggestion is, when given a choice of easy to or easy not to, that you don't neglect to do the simple things. You don't neglect to do the basics, the easy, but potentially life-changing activities and disciplines. Now, that's a good lesson from Jim Rohn. In fact, you've often heard me say in these podcasts that you should do the hard things today to have an easy life later. But a lot of people choose to do the easy things now to have a hard life later. Well, that's almost the opposite of what Jim Rohn said, because he said do the easy things. But I guess successful people find those things that others find hard, they find them easy to do. They've learned delayed gratification. They understand that success is easy. You've just got to do what you've got to do to get there. As we're getting to the end of today's show, I want to remind you how you can get access to that large range of ebooks. Just go to podcastbonus.com.au, leave your details, and you'll get exclusive access to a range of my ebooks. And if you got benefit from today's show, if you learned something from Amanda or from my lesson from Jim Rohn, why not help somebody else who you think would get benefit as well? Please just tell them about this podcast in the old-fashioned way, or use the share button on the podcast app. And of course, if you're not already a subscriber, why don't you subscribe to this wherever you listen to your audio programs? And I look forward to catching up with you again twice a week. In between, you can catch me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney, or get exclusive information from me at least once a day. I leave some charts, some commentary, something special to my private Facebook group. Just look for the Property Update private Facebook group and join me and a few thousand other property investors. I'll catch up with you again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?